Sorry, I was late, everyone.
Okay, so 6 p.m. Friday, traffic comes to a standstill. Main highway leading into Jerusalem, there's a multi-car collision. And thankfully, nobody was seriously hurt, but it did not bode well. Friday, 6 p.m., for those Sabbath observant Jews. The closest community was called Geva Binyamin. It's a half a mile away. And so, you know what happened? Dozens of Sabbath observant Jews pull their car over on the side of the road. Shabbos is like minutes away. They grab whatever they could carry and they just started to walk. They literally leave their car with most of their belongings on the side of the road. As the first groups arrived in Geva Binyamin, the townspeople were just beginning their Friday night prayers in synagogue. And once the residents understood the situation, they quickly mobilized. They sent runners to help the stragglers into the town, allocating the stranded families to Geva Binyamin and some of the other towns nearby. And the same thing took place in the further towns of Psagot and Kochav Yaakov. All of these people caught in traffic. Within 1 hour, over 100 families were placed in homes for Shabbat. Not one person was left without a family to sleep and to have Shabbat meals. So my question is, what compels a rationally sane person to leave their car with all their belongings on the side of the road to spend a weekend with complete strangers? What is it about Shabbat that inspires very successful people in business to just drop a deal in the middle because, you know, they look at their watch, they see the sun is starting to set, gotta go. Actually, I'll tell you a story. This is not political. I'm just sharing the story because it happened. But a friend of mine was Donald Trump's bankruptcy lawyer for 20 years. He ended up being pulled into the White House. His name is Jason Greenblatt. I grew up with him in Queens. And Jason used to always tell me that sometimes when they were doing real estate deals with Trump, like Erev Shabbat, he would then whisper to him, like he would look at his watch and he would say, I know you need to go. It's okay. If you need to pull out, you pull out. And sometimes he'd pull out and the whole thing, the whole deal would basically not fall apart, but it would have to be pushed off until Sunday or Monday. And there's an incredible length to which Jews have gone throughout the centuries to observe Shabbat. I don't know if you have any grandparents or great-grandparents who lived in the Lower East Side, or maybe in the Bronx, before the Jews moved out to the burbs. And they would get pink slips from their bosses because they wouldn't come in on Saturday. There were blue laws in this country. And the bosses would tell their employees, if you don't show up on Saturday, don't bother coming on Monday because this isn't, we're not open Sunday. And there were Jews who basically succumbed and just couldn't take it. They needed to earn a living, and we don't judge anybody. And there were other Jews that had to find a new job every week. This went on for quite a while. My dad always told this story. When my father is an attorney, and when he went to law school in the 1950s, NYU Law School, it was Shavuot, not Shabbat, but it's the same point. His contracts exam was on the holiday of Shavuot. So he goes over to his Jewish professor to explain that he can't take the exam because he can't write on the holiday. And the professor never heard of this thing called Shavuot. He thought he was making the whole holiday up. And he's like, I'll show it to you in the Bible. It's not a rabbi holiday. It's a biblical holiday. And he's like, listen, this is when the test is. If you can't take the test, I guess you'll have to repeat the course. I remember when I went to law school, there's one exam for contracts. It's a year-long course. And if you can't take the test, you got to repeat the course. This is the 1950s. Today you go to jail for this. You get be sued for this kind of thing. Right? But in those days, you know, you didn't take the test, that's it. You didn't show up to work, you're fired. And yet, Jews held on to this thing called the Sabbath for centuries. So what is it that's so important about Shabbos? So I want to throw out a couple of things. Can anybody tell me, what is it about Shabbos that stands out to you? I think did you guys get the email? Leah sent an email asking, like, what is the most special thing to you about the Sabbath? Anybody want to share anything about that? Does anybody know about the email I'm talking about? Did you actually get the email?
You didn't get the email.
You're here for the first time. That's okay. So what is it? What is it about Shabbat that's so important and so amazing? Adam.
I didn't get the email.
You didn't get the email. Didn't get the memo.
I can answer based on
this. Yeah, just shoot from the hip. Nothing too profound. The world shuts down, or you're shutting the world down or out. Yeah, that's really peaceful, actually. Great. What else? Yeah, please.
Like on a personal level, it's contentment, not striving for anything. Contentment.
Being happy with what you got, as is. You know that on the we do a lot of praying on the Shabbat. The one thing we don't pray for, anybody know what we don't pray for on Shabbos? Wants, desire, success. We don't ask for things on Shabbos. In fact, all of the things we ask for, like a good livelihood, smarts to do well on our tests or to, you know, operate well in the workplace, a good livelihood, good health, we don't ask for any of those things on Shabbos. Because on Shabbos, what we're trying to really do is just be. And there's something very beautiful about that, because we live in a very driven society where it's all about being productive, and it's all about being ambitious, and what have you accomplished lately? And how great is it to have one day of the week where that's not the goal? The goal is not to come out of the day with something more than you had before the day started. It's literally to just be. And in fact, you know, we talk about resting on Shabbos. Were you going to say that, John? Were you saying something about rest? It's okay.
Yeah, I was saying you rest, because I feel like a lot of people, they're always thinking about what they need to do. Oh my God, I gotta go here, I gotta do this. And then my problem is when Shabbat comes, I'm still, I gotta do this, I gotta do this. And then it's hard for me to know that I can't.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the world is still kind of going.
The rest of the world is going, which is why it's important to put yourself in a little bubble. Because the more you are exposed to the rest of the world, the more you get sucked into it. Yeah. The more you hang out with other Sabbath observant Jews, the more you can be in that little bubble.
Yeah.
But it's challenging because we're sort of pre-programmed to do that. You can't just tell someone, relax. That's the most unrelaxing thing in the world when you tell somebody, just chill out. I hate when people say that. It makes me more uptight. So if you, it just does, you know. So now it's interesting though, I'll tell you a few things about Shabbat also. Number one, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Not saying that that means it's more important than everything else, but it is one of the big ten. Sabbath observance is the only distinction mentioned in the Talmud between different types of Jews. Jews who keep the Sabbath, Jews who don't. We have all figured out a million little distinctions. Are you Reform, you're Conservative, you're Orthodox, you're apple juice, orange juice, or whatever juice you are. That was a really bad joke. There's only one distinction anywhere in the Talmudic rabbinic literature, and that is Jews who observe the Sabbath, Jews who don't. And although we tend to think of Shabbat as a day of rest from the rest of the week, the Kabbalah, Jewish mystical tradition, teaches Shabbat is not for the sake of the weekdays. It's not like to charge you up so you can go back to work and be more efficient. Everybody should keep Shabbos, like your boss would love you to keep Shabbos because you'll be better. The weekdays are for the sake of Shabbat. Abraham Heschel wrote a beautiful book called The Sabbath, and he said, the Sabbath is the inspirer. The other day is the inspirer. Shabbos sets the stage for the rest of the week. And the Talmud says that if every Jew would keep two Shabboses, the Messiah would come. Doesn't say that about any other mitzvah in the Torah. Only says that about Shabbos. And there's just something about it. I don't know. I think two. I don't.
Make sure the first one wasn't a mistake.
Yeah, it wasn't just like an accident.
Is that two in a lifetime or in a row?
Two in a row.
Two in a row. Yeah.
But that's why it's very deceiving. There's a very famous song by Mordechai Ben David. It's not so famous. When I grew up, it was famous. Just one Shabbos and we'll all be free. Ever hear that? Just Leah, you know this?
Yes.
So why does it say just one Shabbos? It should say just two. I don't know where he got that from. Okay, whatever. So. And I'll tell you one last thing that I've seen as an outreach rabbi for the last 25 years in my life. No other mitzvah has been responsible for Jews coming back to Judaism than Shabbos and leaving Judaism. And that's why some people like to call it the swinging door mitzvah of Judaism. More Jews have come back to their Jewish roots through the Sabbath and left their Jewish roots. If you trace a family that used to be observant and you try to figure out at what point did they break with tradition, when did it stop or start stopping, it's when Shabbos was let go. And it's been very, very challenging. You know, my dad grew up in a little hick town in Pennsylvania called Oliphant, Pennsylvania. Has anyone heard of it? I'd be very surprised if you did. If you go more like 30 miles an hour, you'll miss the whole town. And my Zadie lived there for many, many years. And they could never afford a rabbi. So when my dad was the first Jew in town to go to a Jewish school, yeshiva, he went to Yeshiva University, he came back for the weekend, and they never had a rabbi, so they asked him to speak. So Friday night, my dad is sitting with my Zadie. My Zadie's from the old country, Bialystok from Poland, a blessed memory. He was amazing. He was an amazing man, Harry Wilds. And he said, "What should I speak about tomorrow?" So my Zadie said, "Tell him to close the stores on Shabbos." See, all the Jews own stores. And they would all go to synagogue early in the morning. There was one synagogue in this town. My Zadie was the treasurer for 55 years of the shul. And then they would go to synagogue, and then they would open up their store and work. Which they weren't really supposed to do. And my father was laughing, like, "I'm going to get up, he's a college kid, I'm going to get up and tell all these guys, we have our store open on Shabbos. I'll be the biggest hypocrite." He said, "Yeah, but they should know that it's Shabbos still." And I'm convinced that my dad and my uncle is 93 Bli Ayin Hara. He made Aliyah in the middle of COVID. He was practicing medicine until 2 years ago. Yeah. He had to take his diploma off the wall because people were starting to do the math on, you know. It's true. And my uncle and my dad were the only two Jews in town. There were 40 families that didn't marry out and basically leave the faith. And I'm convinced that it was Shabbos. They had a sense of Shabbos in their home. Because once that goes, the communal connection goes, and a certain connection with God as well. Now, the Torah famously tells us that on the seventh day, God completed all of his work. Referring to, how long did it take God to create the world? Anybody know how many days did God create the world in? 6 days, right? And then on the seventh, what did he do? He rested. Then why, I ask you, does the Bible say, "Uvayom hashvi'i shavatz mikol melachto"? This is in the Kiddush, we say it Friday night. On the seventh day, he finished all of his work. What should it say? On the sixth day, he finished all of his work. He worked for 6 days, he rested on the seventh. So why does the Torah say he finished all of his work on the seventh, implying that he actually did some work on the seventh? What work did God do on the seventh day? He was supposed to be resting, which is why we do it. So the Kabbalists teach that he was creating something. What did God create on Shabbos? And it's actually in the word, Shabbat. He created rest. Rest, we like to think of as the cessation of everything active. Like, resting means I'm just not involved in whatever. That's not the Jewish concept of rest. What is rest? Rest is from the Hebrew word Shabbat or Shevet. La Shevet. You're all right now sitting. Shin, Vet, Tuf. Shabbat, Shevet. What does it mean to sit? So the Kabbalists teach that all week long there's a certain tension in the world between the physical, and spiritual, between this world and the next world, between the material and the ephemeral. And we probably pick up on that tension. On Shabbos, that tension disappears. There's a certain tranquility and peacefulness and harmony between the physical and spiritual worlds. And And that's lashevet. It means that the physical and the spiritual sit together. And when we observe the Shabbat, we're given the opportunity really to tap into that perfection, to achieve a certain spiritual state which is unattainable the rest of the week. And personally, I find this much deeper than resting like on a Sunday. You know, I mean, Sundays were very stressful for me for many years because I had little kids. So Sunday's like the worst. The kids are off from school. I don't mean the worst. It's quality time with your children. But when you have four kids and they all want to do something else, it's stressful. I want to go here, you want to go there, and it's like, it's exhausting. I couldn't wait to get back to work on Monday for years, Sundays. Now, I love my children dearly, and I actually miss them. They're older now. I miss those Sundays, but like while I was going through them, they were exhausting. Shabbos is much more restful because you can't get that feeling simply from taking off from work. Because like you kind of touched on it before, Sean. Like, so you take off from work, great. But there's so many other things you can continue to do. Even if you put your phone down, and the phone makes it much more complicated. I'm going to get into the phone in a minute. Shabbat is designed to create a certain space, a certain vacuum in our life by sort of shutting the outside world out for a 24-hour period to create some kind of vacuum, and we're supposed to fill that vacuum with holy activities, which we're going to run through in a few moments. Now, there are two reasons the Bible gives for keeping the Shabbos. One we gave already. You guys can say it back. What was it? What's the first reason we keep Shabbos? Just said it a second ago. Because what? Okay, besides God said so. Why did God say so? Because what? What did God do? He created and He rested. And that's one of the great ideas in religion in general, not just Judaism, that we sort of copy God. God creates and rests, we create and rest. Anybody know a second reason? It's on your sheet, actually. Turn to page 2, where it says the Sabbath. A little packet that I made up for you guys. It says, it says that the reason given in Exodus is 6 days God made heaven and earth, and everything that's in them, and on the seventh day God blessed the day and made it holy. Fine. What's the second reason given? Who wants to just yell it out? It's one word. Remember what?
Egypt.
Remember what about Egypt?
We were slaves and we
remember that we were once slaves in Egypt. Now I'm going to ask you a question like, okay, we know that we were slaves in Egypt. What holiday commemorates our emancipation from slavery from Egypt? We got a whole holiday for that. Why does the Torah say, therefore did God, your God, command you to observe the Shabbat? Because you were slaves, you need to keep Shabbos. I get the creation idea. God creates and rests, we should create and rest. But what is the fact that my ancestors, thousands of years ago, were slaves for the ancient pharaohs, and God emancipated those slaves, and now we have to keep Shabbos today to remember the Exodus from Egypt? It's a good question. The Torah doesn't really tell us why. It's up to us to figure that out. What do you think? What's the relationship between enslavement, emancipation, and observing the Sabbath? So Maimonides, the great Jewish philosopher, wrote one idea, is to remember that God is not only a creator, but a compassionate creator. We don't just define God as the creative cause of all existence. We define God as a caring God. And what does a caring God do? Responds to the cries of a victimized, enslaved people. And therefore, what's really developing from here is that God didn't just create the world at one point, but He intervenes in the world. He stays involved in the world. And by the way, this is kind of what separates the men from the boys. Albert Einstein believed in a God of creation. He did. He believed that God created the world. But he didn't believe in a personal God. What does it mean to believe in a personal God?
A relationship.
Yeah. That God still cares. That God knows your name. He's listening to your prayers. He's still involved in the world. Even though He's quite hidden. Anybody know the Hebrew word for world? Olam. Ayin Lamed Mem means hidden. Because the physical world is a world in which God is hidden. Now God, we believe, has to be hidden. Because what would happen if God was so obvious? What problem would that cause all of us? We wouldn't have free will. You're like walking around with your mother everywhere. You would never say or do the wrong thing. Seriously. Right? So God has to be hidden, or else we would not be able to choose the right way. We have to have equal access to the good and the bad, or else we don't deserve anything. Then we're just robots. Okay, but we believe, let's say, unlike the watchmaker who creates the watch, and then what happens? Okay, maybe he likes the watch so he keeps wearing it, or maybe he just leaves it and just ignores it. And the watch can continue to exist. You know, the Kabbalah teaches that the minute God stops pumping his spiritual energy into the physical universe, it's at that moment that the world reverts to its primordial nothingness. God has to constantly promote and pump his spiritual energy into the world, or else it stops. You and I don't know that. We don't think that. You know what the Kabbalists use as the best analogy? It's my favorite Kabbalistic metaphor. A child in utero. A child in utero is not conscious that its existence is completely dependent on its mother, and that it is attached to its mother through an umbilical cord. And the moment that, God forbid, the mother would stop existing, that would be the end of the child too. The child has no awareness of this. And similarly, we have almost no awareness. That's why we have to be taught that God is actually pumping. Now, I can't prove this to you. I can't like show you like, you know, radio sound waves of God's spiritual energy being pumped into the universe. But this is a fundamental principle in Kabbalistic literature that God, and we say it in our prayers every day, he's mechadesh betuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereshit. We say this in the Hebrew. God renews perpetually the day, the work of creation. He's constantly recreating the world. Do you know that we, human beings, are constantly being recreated? We have all these atoms and we have different cells to us and we're constantly changing anew. So this idea is represented by our belief in God. Now, what does that have to do with keeping Shabbos? How is pulling back from work, how is refraining from going to work or not working on the Sabbath demonstrating that we believe not only in a God who's a creator, but a God who's a sustainer? God who intervenes, who saves his people, you know, from enslavement. It's okay. What is it about Shabbat that we're not doing that draws attention to this? And what it is, essentially, is that what we are doing on Shabbos is not simply not working. Does anybody know what we're not doing on Shabbos, technically? What are we disengaging from on the Sabbath? Oh, yeah, we don't go to work traditionally. But what is it, really? So, what's that? Creating. I want to use a Hebrew word for this. It's called melacha. Melacha are the 39 forbidden labors that we disengage from on Shabbat. Can anyone give me an example of a forbidden labor on Shabbat? Plowing. Obviously very relevant. By the way, how do you plow on Shabbos? Is there an example of how you can plow on Shabbos?
You heard that. If I do this in Central Park, it's a really heavy bench, what am I doing actually? Just looks like I'm...
Now, it's the same activity as plowing, even though plowing, you're turning over the topsoil to make it suitable for seeding. So I'm not really doing that, but I'm still engaging in the same activity. What the Torah forbids Jews to do on the Sabbath is not simply going to work. That's only rabbinically prohibited. And I'm not trying to poo-poo the rabbis. We like the rabbis. What I'm trying to say is that what's biblically prohibited, when the Torah says don't do work, it means do not engage in what? Using your intelligence and skill to manipulate the physical world in some kind of way, to change the material world. Now, is it a good thing to change the material world in general, not on Shabbos, the rest of the week? From a Jewish perspective, does God want us to change the material world or just leave it the way it is? How do you know he wants us to improve the world? Well, there's an idea of tikkun olam, of fixing the world. We had a class on that just last week. Was that last week? Yeah. And what else? What did God tell Adam to do in the Garden of Eden? He told him to conquer the world. He basically told him to harness the forces of nature and build a better society. I really believe that Jews are at the forefront of virtually every human rights and medical technology and all of this stuff, because it's like literally in our DNA. I know that sounds like a little of a chauvinistic statement, but I don't know how else to explain. You know, we're less than 0.5% of the human race, and we've won, you know, an average of 20% of all the Nobel Prizes. Literally 0.5% of the world's population, winning 20% of the Nobel Peace Prizes. There's something going on. I don't think we're smarter than other people necessarily. Okay, we're really studious, and we're industrious. I don't know. I think there's just something that we were, and that's a good thing to manipulate the world. So why shouldn't I do that on Shabbos? Why does God want me to pull back one day of the week? And this is my theory. There is a concern as we become, and that's why I think keeping Shabbos is so... It's easier to sell since technology started, and it's easier to make a case for why we need it, because our tendency to forget God today is much greater than it was 20 years ago. And 20 years ago was much easier than 40 years ago. Because what's happening in our own day and age? Technology. We are able to manipulate the world in a way that is unimaginable by our grandparents. In the last 100 years, there's been an explosion of scientific technology. It's unbelievable. It's great. The world's getting better. But we also run the risk of forgetting that there's a God who not only created the world, but is still involved in the world. So you know what we do? God says, I want you to pull back from these 39 creative, productive activities. I want you to do nothing and see that the world and your life still continues to go, even though you're not doing anything, even though you're not manipulating the world. And I don't know how many, you know, if you can become very quickly arrogant. You know, sometimes you feel you're so indispensable to the company you work for. Right? Leah, if she walked tomorrow, MGE would just fall apart. Right? I don't know if you feel that way, but sometimes I do, and that's arrogant to think that I am so indispensable. Without me, nothing else could exist. And that is the danger, it appears, God's concerned about. He expresses it in the Torah. He says, you're going to go into the land of Israel one day. He says this through Moses. And you're going to plant a seed, and you're going to work the ground, and what's going to sprout forth? Crops. And you're going to say, wow, look what I built. Look at these beautiful homes I created. Look at the crops. Look at the this. Look at the that. Technology. I can do everything. I don't need God anymore. I have science. And then we forget. We forget. I actually have the actual line that I wanted to share with you. No, I lost the line. We forget that it's the God-given brain that we have that allows us to do all this. It's only because of God. It's only because of Hashem's existence, of the gifts He's given us, and His continued intervention in the world that we're able to produce the science we have. And we become... But you know, it's hard because God is so hidden. So people who believe in God and start talking, they sound like crazy, irrational people. And the scientists, they're the ones with all the... They're the brains. Everybody else is just, you know, it's just like emotional. Now, what's interesting is that it's supposed to be a humbling thought. There's this joke about a guy who, after he dies, goes to heaven, and he sees this guy in a long white coat and a stethoscope and a clipboard walking around. So he pulls over one of the angels, and he's like, he says to him, who's that guy over there with a long white coat, stethoscope, clipboard? And the angel says, oh, that's God. Sometimes he thinks he's a doctor. But I'm bummed. So when I grew up, those were the arrogant people. I mean, I'm generalizing. I'm pointing, my uncle's a doctor. He's not an arrogant guy. But it can make you arrogant when you have people's lives, you know, in your own hands. And we have all these cures and drugs, you know. I love watching. You guys ever see House? I know it's an old show. I just finished like the whole Netflix series. It took me like a year. It's a great show. Is it not great? But it's always, he always encounters, there was a few episodes with religious people that he would encounter. One was a very Orthodox religious woman who became like a Baal Tshuva. She wasn't raised that way, and then she became Hasidic, and the whole back and forth between house and her. You know, like, we don't need God, you know, it's like the opiate of the masses kind of thing. So this is another reason for Shabbat. Shabbat is there not just to remember that God created the world, but that God intervenes in the world. And that, yes, we are his partners in making the world a better place, and we have that opportunity to perfect nature because it's an imperfect world, and we're supposed to be, you know, fixing problems. One day of the week, we turn the world back to God, and we say, I'm not fixing anything today. I'm just going to be. I'm just going to exist, and I'm just going to be connected to my Creator. And that's it. And I'm also going to get a little more connected to my fellow human being. Because I will tell you, we all need a big technology detox. I'll share a story. I put this in my first book. So if you read the book, you'll know the story. But if not, it's a really beautiful story. I heard this from the woman that it happened to, Marion Williamson. Has anyone heard of Marion Williamson? She ran for president. She has like a radio, she's like a radio talk show host, very good. And she told the story. I went to a symposium that she had on Shabbat. And she was telling, she lives in Detroit, and she was sitting with her 8-year-old daughter. This is years ago. And her daughter was playing video games, listening to music, and watching a movie, because that's what 8-year-olds do. Can't do one thing, they do three things at the same time. She's, you know, answering emails, she's doing some work on her laptop. And they're side by side, mother and daughter, everything's great. All the lights go out. It's a complete blackout. The daughter gets nervous, the mother says it's going to be okay. What are you doing? There's a blackout, you light a candle. She lights a candle. And there's nothing they can do. There's no movie to watch. There's no video games to play. There's no work. The laptop, it's all done. And so they start talking. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Mother and daughter. Candle. 20 minutes go by. They're having this lovely conversation. And then, bam, everything goes back on. And the little girl goes right back to her video games and movie. Mother goes right back to her work. And like 5 minutes later, the little girl turns to her mother and she says, Mommy, do you think that'll ever happen again? And the mother's like, what? And the girl goes, do you think we'll ever get that chance to do that again? And the mother's, what do you mean? She was like, to talk like that. That was so much fun. We never talk like that. 8-year-old could tell how much more present her mother was. And I am so guilty of this. I usually teach things that I struggle with. And I'm not good with the phone. I wouldn't say I'm completely obsessed with, but I'm on a lot of social media, and I'm plugged into a lot of people through my texts, emails, WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, and a whole bunch of other stuff that I don't even know how that works. And I will tell you, I don't think I have the same relationship with my children that I have today if it wasn't for Shabbos. Because kids pick up on this, and they're starving for their parents' presence, and their friends too. I once had, my daughter is 18, she's studying in seminary in Israel, and just 2 years ago, when she was in 10th grade, 3 years ago, she was in 10th grade, she brought over like 4 or 5 of her friends. And I would always think, you know, she grew up, she was like different because she grew up with a cell phone. My older two boys didn't. They got it a little later. I have a 25 and a 23-year-old. So they're like a little different. She grew up with it in her hand, which was a mistake probably on our part. Whatever. And I thought, like, keeping Shabbos for her and her friends must be like murder. It must be so difficult. They must have so much FOMO because they can't. You know, and it's very hard to, like, you know, for the, like, 3 or 4 years of high school, every time I would see her friends, and I love her friends, they're great girls, but they would never look at you. They'd always be, like, down on the phone. And we had them over for Shabbos, and they were just sitting, chilling at the table. And I said, I'm just curious, what's your favorite thing? I asked them what we asked you guys for the homework. What's your favorite thing about Shabbos? What do you think they all said? We can't use our phones. And then he said the word can't, because they would never have the discipline not to use it, and either would I. And I was like, you like it? They're like, oh, it's such a relief. It's such a relief. And, you know, because now they're in a little bubble, because they know that they're not missing anything, because all their friends are not on it either. It's not so simple, because if you have friends that are Sabbath observant, friends that are not Sabbath observant, then you got the FOMO for the ones who are on the phone. Another friend of mine whose daughter's has a little of a broader kind of spectrum of friends. She gets on like Saturday night right after Shabbos is out, and like they've already been making plans already, you know, like on. So it's complicated, but this technology detox is like so incredibly important, and it's actually made it easier for me. You know, I don't want to say to sell Shabbos. I guess I'm a sales. I'm a Jewish salesman. I'm selling Torah. It is. It's made it. You know, it's made it easier to sell, because, you know, they have these unplugged weekend retreats now that are very popular. Like companies bring their, you know, and everyone has to put their, people are paying like thousands of dollars to go on these retreats, and they have to take their phone and put it in this black box. They can't use it for 24 hours. I was like, that's Shabbos. You know, it's like we've been doing that. I mean, we haven't really been doing that so long, but, you know, Shabbos is also one of those special mitzvos that contains a divine element, like we've been talking, not to forget God, but also a human element, because it keeps community. You ever hear that line by Achad Ha'am, a great Hebrew poet? He once famously said, it's not that the Jew keeps the Shabbos, but the Shabbos keeps the Jew. Because when you live in a little of a tight-knit community where everyone's doing this, that's really what develops quality time with each other, literally on a weekly basis. I'm reading a very beautiful book. If anybody wants to get it, Leah, let's put this in the email to everyone. It's called The Gift of Rest, written by Senator Lieberman. I forgot his first name. Joseph Lieberman. Does anybody remember Joseph Lieberman? He was a senator from, I literally just saw him last week, unfortunately, at a funeral. He lives in Riverdale now. And he wrote a beautiful book about how he observed the Sabbath as a U.S. senator. And he was chosen by Al Gore to be his running mate. Beautiful stories about keeping Shabbos. But he explains in the book on how he has this tight-knit connection with his fellow Jew because of Shabbat. Because you've got like the whole community kind of just doing this thing, which is unbelievable. Which is really, really important that there be that once a week where we just have the extra time to spend with each other. And you can't just pull out the phone while you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody and just like ignore them. You're just like stuck relating to other people, whether you liked it or not. And I find that that is really, really important and special. All right, any comments or questions? What I want to do with you for the rest, just for a few minutes, is run through some of the details of observing Shabbos. We've been talking about a lot of the knots, like what we don't do on Shabbos, the work. I want to talk to you a little about what we do do. But any questions or comments or anything so far? Yeah, Anya.
You know, Shabbos, like, in terms of, when you're talking about the technology story and the presence of family.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about community. But is there anything specific, like, in terms of keeping the family together?
Yeah.
I didn't grow up, like, my family didn't grow up.
Yeah.
The thing I know was that either friends or friends of friends that did was just how much stronger. But there's other ways to build that, of course, but it seems like that's a really integral part of like having that time that you can't really change
with your family. Yeah. So, I mean, every family could create their own rules and laws. You know, no phones at the table. You know? I don't know how many families can get away with creating rules and laws that last a whole day every week. Like, if I'm really good when my kids were little, like, I could get away with a couple of hours. You know what I mean? Like, but to literally have that, I just remember growing up as a kid knowing, because my dad was a workaholic. I come from that kind of family, very ambitious, very driven. And my dad was just always busy all the time during the week. He was there to help me if I needed something, but like it was always like he had to get back to something else. There was nothing to get back to on Shabbos. Like, your parents aren't running out. So, like, that's a really comforting thing for a child, to just know that once a week they're going to have their parents' undivided attention. So there was actually a beautiful story Jonathan Sacks told about this. You know, the former chief rabbi of, it was just his yard site. And he said something powerful. There was a woman in England called, her name is Penelope Leach, L-E-A-C-H. And she was a news reporter. And she came, she was doing a segment on the Jewish community. And she showed up at a Jewish school in London on a Friday. Now, if you go to a Jewish school on Friday and you go to like the little kids program, what are they doing? They're doing like make-believe Shabbat. So she walked into this room, it's like 6-7-year-olds. And there's a little boy who's dressed up like an adult. He's wearing like a tie, like his grandfather's tie. It comes all the way down to here. Then there's a little girl that's got like a kerchief around her head. And she's lighting candles. And there's a bunch of kids around the table. And they're just like playing Shabbos. And it's such a sweet story. I hope I don't kill it. So she like, she was in the room, and Rabbi Sacks introduced her. She said that everyone knew her from TV. It's not a Jewish woman. She said, what don't you like about Shabbos? She started very negative. So a little boy yelled out, I can't watch TV on Shabbos. Just yelled it out. And then she said to the same boy, and what's your favorite part of Shabbat? And she says, Daddy doesn't rush off. That's the British way of saying it. You know, and when she walked out with Rabbi Sacks, she mentioned to him, she says, you know, just from a purely psychological level, Shabbos is probably keeping a lot of these families together. So yeah, it's possible to do it on your own. It's possible to enact laws to create a little more of a family fabric. But I don't know if you could... if you could get away with it within your family. And it's fun. Because, you see, it's not fun to keep Shabbos if your friends aren't doing it. Because then you feel a little isolated. You know? I remember growing up, I had only two or three friends in the neighborhood. There weren't just not a lot of kids in my neighborhood. I used to have to walk 20, 30 minutes to the next neighborhood. I grew up in Queens. So, I literally two or three friends. All my other buddies were... But once I went there, it was like heaven. And the combination of having quality time with your parents and then and quality time with your friends where you're not being competitive. In other words, we didn't really play competitive sports on Shabbos, and I played a lot of basketball growing up. But we didn't do that on Shabbos. We just we played board games. We just hung out. We played cards. We took walks. I know that sounds like a really old thing to do for a kid. But we used to have Shabbos walks, and it was like a very normal thing doing this. And it's just a brilliant way of keeping a community tight-knit and a family together. And you have extra time to just read and study Torah and pray, and nobody's rushing because there's nowhere to go. There's nothing. Where are you going? It's Shabbos. Can't do anything until sundown. And it's the forced... I used to not talk about this when I taught this class. I used to talk about all the positive things we're going to... But it's the negative things that really make it relaxing for people. Like, I know I'm less stressed when I can't... You know when you get sick, God forbid, and you can't do anything? So you had a big deal you're working on for work, and you had this, and you had this, and that. There's nothing you can do. You're sick. Just go into bed... Take a nap, watch some TV. There's nothing you can do. It's a little of a relief. I feel that sense of relief on Shabbos. Because no one's expecting anything. Now, it's hard as a rabbi, to be perfectly honest. Because people are expecting, and I have to perform a little on Shabbos. My dad would always say to me, you're working. I'm not really working. Because, remember, work is those 39 productive, creative activities. It can be a little challenging for rabbis on Shabbat because there is something sort of expected of us. We have to perform a bit. But I like it, and I like teaching.